Hello and welcome to a MathZorro podcast. I'm your host, Chris Hanusa, a professor of mathematics at Queen's College of the City University of New York. Today we're talking chevrons with our guest today, Varinder Hart. Hi.
How's it going?
Hi. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Varinder Hart. I am currently an undergrad at Queen's College. I will be graduating in December, and I will be joining Queen's College again for the master's program.
Okay, so you're graduating this month.
This December, yeah.
Wow, congratulations. Thanks. And then next semester you'll be a master's student?
Yeah, and I'll also be an adjunct.
Okay.
Yeah, so that might be fun.
Yeah, that definitely. So we'll see you around then. This semester you worked on a research project. Could you describe it for us?
So I worked on the tilings of a 1x n chevron board.
Okay.
A chevron is an L shape, a 2x2 L shape, in which the L's are nested into each other.
When you nest all these arrowheads, it almost looks like the speed up symbol.
Right.
In a video game.
In a video game. Right.
Okay.
Right.
Got it. So, what motivated you to think about this question?
Well, we hear about Fibonacci tilings all the time. It's like the common combinatorial.
On the subway.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. All the time.
The train conductor speaks and they say, well, you know, a fun fact for today is Fibonacci tilings.
Okay, so.
So I was thinking, what if we complicated the shape a little more?
Okay.
What type of patterns occur when you change the shape from a straight 1x n board to some sort of shape that's tilted, or rotated, rather? And I would like to have used the same idea of using a square and a domino.
Okay.
So I try to keep it as close to the Fibonacci tiling as possible, only with a spin on the board.
Okay, sounds good. So what kind of methods did you use when you were working on your project?
So the first one, which is usually the one everyone starts with, is brute force.
Yeah.
But you learn rather quickly that brute force is never really the most efficient method to doing something. After about trial number two, well, I did a chevron border of length 0, length 1, and length 2, and after 2, I got to 13 cases.
Okay.
And when I thought about doing 3, I realized, well, this one has 13, the next one could potentially have somewhere in the vicinity of 40-something to 50 tilings.
Right.
It's a little tricky to draw the chevron boards.
Okay.
So then I decided I'm going to try to use a recursion, recursive method of doing it. And for the recursion, it works out nicely because we base it off of two cases. The first case is if the last chevron that's nested into the previous n minus one chevrons,
okay.
If it's disjoint. In other words, there's no overlap between the last chevron and the previous chevron.
Mm-hmm.
And what that really means is just that there's no domino that can be placed on the n minus one and the nth chevron.
Okay.
And since the chevron essentially has 3 squares in it, that would mean that there are a certain number of tilings for that chevron alone, which is actually just 3.
Okay.
Domino, square, square, domino, and square, square, square. So there are 3 for the last, and then there are, I used v as my function, as my recursion function. So v sub n minus 1 is the number of ways to tile the n minus 1. So for case 1, it's just 3, the number for the last chevron,
okay.
times the number for the n minus 1, which is v sub n minus 1. The second case was a little trickier. You have to consider if there is an overlap. So luckily, the chevron board is symmetric.
Okay.
So if I tile upwards, then I don't have to tile downwards because it's the same case. So I double the findings for that.
So you broke this into 2 cases, one which the last nested L shape is doesn't have any intersection. The tiles covering the last L shape doesn't have any overlap with the previous n minus 1. And then now you're talking about the case where there is overlap between the tiles that were placed on the last L shape and the previous n minus 1 L shapes, and that has to do with being a domino,
right?
That is basically going backwards. That's covering the center square in the last L shape and one of the edge
like
squares
tail,
in the tail.
In the tail of the L shape.
Okay. All right, and so now you're saying that was symmetric, and so...
Right, so that's symmetric. So when trying to figure out how many combinations of tilings you can do for that specific structure, we realized once I place that domino that mm-hmm. covers the center square of the last L structure, that fixes the tail ends of that L to be squares.
Yes.
There's no way we can put a domino there.
Mm-hmm.
So really there's just one case when you place a domino there. So now the question is, how many tilings are there for the V sub N minus one, the N minus one chevrons that are placed on the left hand side? And it's really not just N minus one chevrons. There's really, it's N minus one minus that tail.
That's right.
Because the tail is being occupied.
So it's not exactly an N minus one chevron board.
Right.
It's an N minus one chevron board where one of the squares is already
right.
taken.
Right. So rather than try to tile the board as it is, I considered, well, what tilings actually utilize that square?
Okay.
And so I figured the only tiling that actually utilizes that square would be a domino being placed there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured if there's a domino placed there, what that actually does is it reverts back to case one.
Got
it. Becomes a disjoint chevron.
Certainly.
So that means that there's really V sub N minus two tilings. And so originally there's V sub N minus one tilings of it. And we're losing V sub N minus two of them because that domino can't be placed.
Okay, nice.
And so there's two cases because it's symmetric. So we multiply V sub N minus one minus V sub N minus two times two. And then we combine it with case one, which was three V sub N minus one.
Okay.
And so summing the two cases together, we get 5 V sub N minus 1 minus 2 V sub N minus 2. And
okay.
that actually gives us all tilings of a 1 by N chevron board.
So with the initial conditions and this recurrence, then you can give the answer for any N.
For any N, exactly.
Nice. Okay, cool. So I think you have another way that you thought about it, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I asked you to bring in a number related to your project.
Right, radical 17. Is obviously irrational, and that's actually what's the special thing about it.
Okay.
And this relates to the third method, which is what you were referring
okay,
to.
Okay, perfect.
So using the recurrence formula, I broke it down into a generating function. So I used partial fraction decomposition, and I ended up getting a fairly nice quadratic at the denominator because you end up being able to use quadratic formula to come up with roots
mm-hmm.
and factor very nicely. You get real roots instead of some imaginary number, which would be interesting as well, but for the purposes of getting actual numbers, it's helpful. And so it breaks down into this very long, sort of messy kind of looking generating function, at least its closed form is.
Okay.
And you see radical 17 in both, there are two components. There's a negative side of the closed form, and then there's the positive side. And
okay.
But there's a radical 17 on both sides. And you think about the fact that when you are adding these radicals together, somehow they just sort of magically become integers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not your first instinct to think, well, I have radical 17, it's a prime, it's not factorable under a radical, and then somehow we raise it to some exponent, and all of a sudden we just start getting a whole bunch of integers, and it's actually kind of mind blowing that things just work together so quickly.
Right. So you're saying that if you're writing out an explicit from the method that you used, you have an explicit formula for V sub N.
Right.
And this formula, where you want to plug in the number N into the formula has square roots of 17 all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing that this formula that you get is the answer and always gives an integer.
Yeah. Every time.
Yeah.
It's weird cuz you don't expect it. You know, you see a radical and a lot of people shy away from radicals cuz they're sort of like, you know, they don't behave well, so to speak. But you raise it to an exponent, and all of a sudden you get these great, like, uniform numbers that are just not expected.
Integers that
yeah.
count something.
Yeah.
All right. So what would you say is the most difficult part of your project?
The most difficult was trying to I not only wanted to figure out how many combinations of tilings there were, but I wanted to figure out how does this actually relate to other structures.
Okay.
So the most difficult part was coming up with bijections of some sort. I would settle for any bijection, but I wanted to see, like, because you think Fibonacci, and Fibonacci is related to climbing stairs or sending signals from a telephone or a station to another station.
Okay.
Where one is of length one or the other's length of length two, and you just sort of, you think Fibonacci, you think numbers, and people are always asking, well, how are these things useful?
Okay.
And when you actually can find a relationship between some seemingly random string of numbers and real life, it's crazy, because that's the question that, you know, children ask in school. They're always like, I don't understand, why are we supposed to learn this?
Right.
But it's not really a matter of, like, why. It's sort of like, you should want to know this. This is it actually models.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it models real life things.
Okay.
So, you know, I just wanted to know what type of other structures, what type of things could these bijections actually correspond to.
Okay, and so what did you find?
So I came up with, after some careful thought, I came up with two bijections.
Right.
One of them was... and this is the one I find most interesting, is a string of numbers using negative 1, negative 2, positive 1, positive 2, and 0. A string of numbers that begin with either 0, 1, or 2, such that no two adjacent non-zero entries sum to 0. So given a sequence, for example, 1, 1, negative 2, 0.
Okay.
In that sequence, no two adjacent numbers sum up to 0.
Or of opposite sign.
Yeah, or opposite signs are consecutive. It's okay to have two zeros next to each other because those are zeros, but no two non-zero integers will sum up to 0.
So you're saying that you're the set of tilings of your chevron board is in bijection with sequences of numbers of integers between negative 2 and 2, where no two adjacent numbers add up to 0 if they are non-zero.
Right.
That's pretty impressive. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. And it works really nicely because it takes these complicated looking chevrons and boils it immediately down into just numbers.
Yeah.
And so you can immediately just see, well, that tile goes left, that tile goes right, one goes down. Just by placing numbers, and negative 2 to 2 are not the only numbers you could use. You could use any numbers that sort of have their opposite in the set, and it just...
Yeah, but yours is very clean.
Yeah, it works out very, very cleanly.
Okay, neat. Did you want to talk about the other bijection?
Well, the other one is the one that most people find the most interesting.
Okay.
And this one had to do with students cheating on an exam.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, I try to shy away from...
All right, everybody listen closely
here.
How
many ways can students cheat on an exam if they're sitting in alternating seats? And there are three rows, such that the row in the front is skewed so that they're placed in the middle of the people in the row behind them.
So you're thinking about almost like a chevron board.
Exactly, a chevron
except
board.
Except that we have three columns of students,
right,
and they're offset diagonally from each other.
Yep. That's exactly what it is. And the chevron tilings actually tell you how many ways students can cheat if no three students can cheat together at the same time.
And so you're talking about a person cheating with a person either in front of them diagonally or in one direction. So just pairs of students passing notes
exactly
diagonally from them.
Yep.
In some direction.
That's exactly it.
Okay. If you had more time, what do you think you would want to study next?
I would really like to further this with either a N by M chevron board so that it's not a symmetric board, or in fact it wouldn't just have two tailed pieces to it. It could extend further. And then the other one would be using colored dominoes and squares. And that involves bivariate generating functions, but that seems like a interesting segue from chevrons.
Okay, very nice. So thanks for coming today and sharing your research.
Thanks for having me.
So this has been a MathZorro podcast. Learn more at podcast.mathzorro.com.
Bye.